Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today on the show, you'll hear the second and final part of an interview with Dr. Graham McQueen. Graham McQueen wrote an article about the results of a recent poll in the UK, part of which focused on Muslims' beliefs about 9/11. So this is the second part of that interview about this article, which was called 9/11 Truth: British Muslims Overwhelmingly Reject the Official 9/11 Story. And this was published on the website globalresearch.ca on December 29th, 2016. Graham McQueen was the founding director of the Center for Peace Studies at McMaster University, where he taught for 30 years. He is co-editor of the Journal of 9/11 Studies. McQueen holds a PhD in Buddhist Studies from Harvard University. He's the author of the book The 2001 Anthrax Deception, The Case for a Domestic Conspiracy, which came out in 2014, and he was one of the organizers of the Toronto hearings in 2011. And he's a member of the 9/11 Consensus Panel. So let's begin with the second part of that interview. We pick up where Graham is talking about some of the terms that were used in the British poll.
So extremism is a term that's under debate in the UK for good reason. I think it should be rejected completely. But part of the reason it's being defined that way is because the people in government who are pushing this notion of extremism do not want it to be, how shall I put this, they do not want violence to be an essential part of the definition. If extremism were to mean what many people assume it means, that people are doing some kind of horrible, unjustified violence, then obviously Sherrold and Graham McQueen aren't extremists, because we're not pushing violence. But they want us to be part of that circle, just like they want British Muslims as a whole to be in danger of this thing called extremism. So they are deliberately creating a category, and they say this, like when he was Prime Minister, Cameron publicly said that he was against all forms of extremism, including, folks, nonviolent extremism. That's his term. And what we see in this poll that I'm discussing here is that the current effort by the political right in the UK is to make so-called conspiracy theories, generally undefined, okay, to make that a part of this thing called nonviolent extremism.
Yes, it's an attack on anybody who challenges the official story.
Absolutely, an attack which has a very scary direction here, because what they're really heading for, and they've got legislation in the works in the UK, is to not only make so-called conspiracy theorists, you know, like us, to not only make us taboo and somehow polluted and ridiculous and all those things which they've been trying to do all along, but to actually make it illegal to hold such opinions. It's something we need to be aware of this.
I agree, and they're also trying to attack the, quote, fake news. They're trying to get at all the alternative outlets where we can share this information. And there's talk of trying to make, quote, fake news illegal, too. So, yeah, it is a major attack. I see that. I'm glad you're bringing that up.
Yeah, it's a dangerous assault which needs to be checked. And unfortunately, mainstream media, political parties have had a fair bit of success in the West in this employment of terms like conspiracy theory. And so it's possible that they'll get some fishy law through a parliament here or there that will make it much harder for us to have freedom of expression and freedom of research and to find out and communicate the truth about our times.
I see that as a very serious attack on us also, and I'm not sure that everyone grasps that in our movement, that they understand how serious that is.
I think you're right. I think people in what's generally called the 9/11 truth movement are used to being ridiculed, but I'm not sure that most of them grasp that there's serious attempt, and it's an international attempt because it's going on simultaneously in several countries. It's going on in the UK, it's going on in the US, it's going on in my country, Canada, to try and make these things illegal. My colleague Tony Hall, at the University of Lethbridge, was suspended without pay from his job as a tenured professor just a couple of months ago. And the charges, as far as I've seen them expressed, are vague, bordering on ridiculous. But one of them is that he engaged in conspiracy theories. Now think about that. A tenured university professor, because he engaged in conspiracy theories, he's being suspended.
And it's already starting.
Yeah, it's already starting. And so the movement definitely needs to wake up to this and to find ways of courageously and patiently doing what we have to do to fight this. So my little article, and I don't have any great hopes for that, it was a little spin-off article that I wrote while I was writing a longer piece on the political left in the West and its relationship to 9/11. Nonetheless, I wrote that little article and I thought, wow, these findings are important to me. Maybe they'll be important to other people too. So that's why I got it published on Global Research and hope people will read it and think about this.
Yeah, I wanted to pick up on another element in the article that you talked about, where their argument, the people, the Policy Exchange people who did this poll, that their argument seems to go like this, that Muslim terrorist groups undertake violent acts because they think Muslims are under deadly assault from the West, and they sort of imply that they're being paranoid about this and it's not really happening, and I wondered
right.
if you could speak to that.
Yeah, that's a crucial argument that they use to link so-called conspiracy theorists to terrorism. They say that Muslim terrorists have been carrying out acts of terrorism because they have this worldview where Muslims are on one side as believers and the rest of the world is on the other side as unbelievers. Whole world's divided up into two. The unbelievers are carrying out an assault on the believers. In other words, especially the West led by the U.S., carrying out an assault on Islam and Muslims. Therefore, Muslims need to respond. And they claim that so-called conspiracy theories, like the 9/11 conspiracy theory, in quotation marks, play into all this because they feed the paranoia of the world's Muslims. You know, here's a great act of mass murder carried out in the U.S. that is portrayed as done by Muslims, but it wasn't really done by Muslims, say the conspiracy theorists, who, in their political paranoia, think that the West actually did this themselves and then blamed it on Muslims. And so through this kind of long argument, you can try and claim that the 9/11, let's call it 9/11 dissent, meaning disagreeing from the official account, feeds into terrorism. And that's the argument they make. And I'm saying this is absurd on so many levels. I mean, first of all, it's not a fantasy to say that there have been attacks on Muslims. My God, since the 9/11 attacks, several countries where the majority of the population is Muslim have been assaulted very violently. And if you read, there are several studies of casualties. I won't get into them, but the numbers of dead are in the millions. The numbers of wounded are in the many millions. The numbers of homeless are huge. We can't even begin to compute the number of people driven to clinical depression, anxiety, despair, PTSD. No. I mean, this is a horrendous crime. To call this political paranoia, excuse me? So what I say in my article is, in the real world, of course these assaults have happened. And when they say, oh, but it's paranoia to think that this was done as part of a nefarious intrigue. Well, it was nefarious, and it was an intrigue. And there were conspiracies. That's with the Downing Street memo and all this other stuff that has been discovered is about. I mean, you probably know the study by the Center for Public Integrity in the United States, which counted the hundreds and hundreds of lies told by top officials in the Bush administration in the lead-up to the attack on Iraq. So, yeah, of course, they did conspire. They did lie. It was a nefarious intrigue. So then the question becomes, do Muslims have the right to respond? And I say in the article, of course they do. Now, how they respond is another matter. It doesn't have to be violent. And in fact, British Muslims clearly are not interested in that kind of response, according to this poll. But there are lots of ways you can respond to something without being violent, and they have every right to respond. My God. So, again, I just think this is such a crude, ideologically driven, polled way they've put it together. And, of course, you and I should be helping Muslims to respond nonviolently but vigorously to all this slander and killing.
Yeah. And then the other term that I always find interesting is Islamophobia, like we all are afraid of them instead of having other more hatred or racist ideas going on.
Yeah, I think all the terms we use for different forms of racism need to be looked at carefully. Islamophobia has been a useful term, but it means fear of Islam, and there is fear going on, for sure, but there's more than fear, right? There's suspicion, there's hatred, there's deception, there's blaming. So we need to think about all these terms and what are the best terms to use.
Right, and at the very least, there's scapegoating of them, so for the events of 9/11 and the global war on terror to keep functioning, they need to keep that going, that myth going.
Yes, I completely agree. The other point is that although the findings in the poll with British Muslims are not typical of the whole world, the polls that have been done, and there's all kinds of polls on 9/11 that have been done all over the world for years now, and they're worth thinking about, because what we're led to believe in Canada, and I'm pretty sure you're led to believe the same in the U.S., is that only nutty people and fringy people generally question the official account. The great majority of people, of course, accept the official account of 9/11. Of course they do. And the other people can be shoved to one side. Well, so while I was doing this article, I began looking at the other polls, and I just wanted to briefly give you my current estimates. So I think that the total percentage of the people in the world who are willing to come out and affirm the official account of 9/11 is probably around 39%, maybe 40. So in other words, out of 7.5 billion people in the world, about 2.9 billion accept the official narrative, probably. That's a maximum. I'm not making computations for who is a child and who's an adult here. That can all be done. These are crude figures. So what does that mean in terms of the people who are not willing to affirm the official account? Well, it's the great majority. 61%, roughly, of the world does not buy, yeah. Is not willing to say they buy. And that's 4.6 billion people, okay?
That's really fascinating when you think that the corporately controlled propaganda media is telling us the opposite all the time, that still people can think for themselves and read between the lines, and that the majority don't believe what we're being fed. It's very interesting.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this really does, no matter how you interpret these figures, they certainly show that the official propagandists and mainstream media in the West have not had an unqualified success, all right? They've had success in the sense that they've managed to keep the fraud going so far. But as I often say to people, it's like holding up a lead Zeppelin. And here I'm not talking about the musical band. Uh-huh. I mean an actual, you know, big Zeppelin, a balloon made out of lead. It means what I'm trying to get at, it'll just fall down if you're not constantly working and expending energy to keep it up. And that's the official account of 9/11. It falls apart whenever you look at it. And therefore, it's like keeping that Led Zeppelin up in the air. It takes constant work.
That's why they have this attack on, quote, fake news, because they're trying to shut down anybody who's disagreeing with them, because their propaganda isn't working as well in certain areas. And I think that's why they're so upset with Donald Trump, because they don't know what, I don't think they have him under their control totally, and they don't know what he might uncover or reveal.
I agree with you on both points. I just find it bizarre at this point in history that I would say, yeah, well, who knows, maybe Trump will be,
I know.
Trump will do something good. I mean, this guy represents just about everything I fought against my whole life, right? But at the same time, it's sort of like, which imperialist do you choose? You guys weren't given very good choices. I mean, there was Bernie Sanders, but the Democratic Party, I mean, they seemed to be panicky at the thought that somebody who was actually interested in some interesting ideas might get in. So that they quickly destroyed it.
Yeah, they rigged the primaries on that, if the evidence seems to show. So, But now they've got Donald Trump, and I agree with you. I didn't vote for him, and I've worked against what he says all my life, too, but he's starting to say some interesting things, so who knows?
Yeah, especially on the whole, well, on several areas, but on Russia, if he's willing to have peaceful coexistence, my God, could prevent a nuclear war, for God's sake. For a different essay I have to write, I've been reading over stuff from my past and realizing how much of my adult life I spent wallowing in the Cold War and how great it was when that was temporarily over. But it wasn't over for long. You know, Russia didn't understand its role. Its role was to roll over and be dead and stay dead. And it didn't do that. And U.S. elites are so angry about that. What do you mean you're not dead? What do you mean you actually think you might have regional interests and some international influence? And so they're pushing, and they're pushing, and they're pushing. And they don't, I don't know whether they don't get how dangerous it is to keep pushing Russia, or whether they kind of get off in some ways on this danger they're putting the world into. I really don't pretend to understand.
If they really want a war with Russia, yeah, I don't understand that either. It seems pretty risky to me.
Very, very risky for everybody. Yeah. Do they really think that because their kids are in private schools and because they live in a gated community that they're safe from nuclear weapons? Because if they do, they're even stupider than I think. So, you know, if Trump can lower the rhetoric there, then that's a good thing. And at this point in history, our choices are usually not between good and bad. They're usually between bad and worse, and we have to make them accordingly.
Right, I agree with you. And then if Trump can really get rid of the trade agreements like NAFTA and the TPP and all of those, I think that would be a huge benefit also.
That's right. When I saw the other day that he seemed to be calling, unless I misunderstood the article, I had to read it several times, seemed to be calling for budget cuts in the CIA. I shouldn't be laughing. When you start interfering with the operation of the U.S. intelligence community, you're putting yourself at grave risk.
Yes, even Senator Chuck Schumer said on the news, which surprised me, he said that you don't want to criticize the CIA because they have many ways of getting back at you. So he was warning him. Well, Graham, is there anything else that you wanted to discuss or that I haven't asked you in relation to your article or anything else about 9/11 or the world?
As far as the polls go, this is just fine. Thank you.
Well, Graham McQueen, thank you for joining me on the show today.
Thank you, Cheryl. It's always great to be here and have a chance to express some of these things.
And that does it for the interview with Dr. Graham McQueen on a recent article he wrote and which was posted on the highly recommended Canadian website, globalresearch.ca, on the results of a recent British poll in which only 4% of the Muslims in the UK believe the official government myth of what happened on 9/11. And now you're going to hear a short clip of Dr. Graham McQueen discussing evidence of foreknowledge of the collapse of World Trade Center Building 7, the tower that was not hit by a plane on 9/11 and yet collapsed anyway.
People knew it was going to come down because they had been told that by people who were determined to bring it down. No such building has ever come down from office fires before at any time. And yet, it turns out there were people that knew within a couple of minutes of when it was going to come down. And they're on record saying, Ashley Banfield, one of the major journalists who was on the scene on World Trade 7, she basically points to the building, looks into the camera and said, I have been told that this building is the next one that's going to come down.
That building right there, the brown building, the tall one, is number 7, World Trade Center. I've heard several reports from several different officers now that that is the building that is going to go down next. In fact, one officer told me they're just waiting for that to come down at this point, that there's no way it's going to be recovered and there's no way that they can stabilize it.
CNN anchor Aaron Brown says there's another building at World Trade Center which I've been told is either collapsing or has collapsed.
We are getting information now that one of the other buildings, Building 7 in the World Trade Center complex, is on fire and has either collapsed or is collapsing. You, to be honest, can see these pictures a little bit more clearly than I.
While CNN is showing World Trade 7 for about an hour after erroneously reporting its collapse, they have a caption at the bottom of the picture, World Trade 7 on fire, may collapse, which looks so kind of normal and reasonable that I think most viewers would think, okay, well, here's a building, it's on fire, it may collapse, what's the problem? What the viewers haven't been told at that point is that no such building, no such steel frame skyscraper in history had ever collapsed from fire. So it's not normal at all. World Trade 7 on fire may collapse. And World Trade Center 7 coming down from fire is just unheard of. So that's why I refer to this as normalizing the abnormal, you know, trying to make it look normal and reasonable when in fact it's unprecedented, it's outlandish. I mean, if it's true that World Trade 7 came down from office fire, there are just hundreds and hundreds, I suppose thousands and thousands of buildings in the world that are at risk of total disaster. And we have to be worried, and we have to change the engineering curriculum in universities and the building codes and everything. And of course, we haven't, because I think the authorities are perfectly aware that it didn't come down from office fires. The BBC anchor says, you know, we're now going to confirm what we told you a couple of minutes before, namely that the Solomon Brothers building at the World Trade Center, and that's another name for World Trade 7, has indeed collapsed.
Now, more on the latest building collapse in New York. You might have heard a few moments ago, I was talking about the Solomon Brothers building collapsing.
And then he says, we'll go to Jane Stanley, our reporter at the scene, for more. And there's Jane.
Jane, what more can you tell us about the Solomon Brothers building and its collapse?
Well, only really what you already know. Details are very, very sketchy.
Solemnly confirming what he says. And she's standing right in front of World Trade 7, which is clearly... it hasn't collapsed, and it isn't collapsing. When this video was discovered, I think it was 2007, and widely spread on the internet, it was quite a scandal. So the head of BBC had to eventually reply, and he said, well, if we reported this before it happened, I can assure you, it's not because we were part of some conspiracy. It was not because we were told in advance of its collapse that it was going to come down. If this happened, then we can assure you it was simply an error and nothing else. For a whole bunch of reasons, it doesn't work to say this was an error. When we're asking whether Building 7 may have been deliberately brought down on 9/11, whether it might have been subjected to controlled demolition, we get called a lot of names. We're conspiracy theorists and we're overthinking simple situations, so on and so forth. But of course, we know that the option of deliberately bringing that building down was discussed on 9/11. It's not like we made this up. There is, for example, an interview with, I believe it's a Lieutenant Restuccio in the Fire Department of New York. This is just after Building 7 comes down, and the journalist says to him, so that was Building 7 that came down, and Restuccio says, yes, indeed, it was.
Can you confirm it was number 7 that just went in?
Yes, sir.
And you guys knew this was coming all day?
We had heard reports that the building was unstable and that it eventually would either come down on its own or it would be taken down. I would imagine it came down on its own.
Obviously, it had been discussed during the day, the possibility of bringing it down, which is why he can't exclude that option as one possibility. When people are trying to defend the official narrative of World Trade 7's collapse, they generally try to make it sound as if, well, people had a hunch, or they were worried, or they made a rational prediction that it might come down. And I'm saying none of those words, prediction, hunch, and so on, is good enough. What we actually have is foreknowledge. When we use the term foreknowledge, we should be careful, and I include three criteria. The first is what you might call a subjective state in the person who's knowing. You have to feel certain. You have to feel a high degree of confidence. So, for example, if you say, well, you know, I'm worried about that building. I have a hunch something bad might happen to it. And that's not good enough to use the term foreknowledge. But if you say, oh, it's definitely coming down, that fulfills the criterion of certainty. Second criterion is what I call confirmation. The thing you claim to know has to actually happen. Otherwise, we don't usually use the word knowledge. Even if a person was certain, we would say, well, they had a false belief or they had unjustified confidence. But if I say, I'm confident Building 7 is coming down, and lo and behold, Building 7 does come down, that's confirmation. That means my confidence was justified. And the third criterion is detail. And by that, I just mean that your knowledge of, let's say, when or the conditions under which this event is going to happen has to be fairly precise for us to use the term foreknowledge. Once we've established that there was foreknowledge of World Trade 7's collapse, by that I mean the records are quite good. We know there were a lot of people who are completely confident it was coming down. In fact, we're told there were hundreds of firefighters who were standing around for hours, and the way they put it is we were waiting for World Trade 7 to come down. In other words, they had been told it was definitely coming down. So we know this. So there was confidence. There was confirmation. The building did come down, and there was precision. We have, again, very good records. We know that it was known within a few minutes when it was going to come down. And that's quite extraordinary because, of course, no steel skyscraper in history had ever come down from fire before. Remember, this building wasn't hit by a plane. So if this is an unprecedented event, it never happened before, and yet people are able to say within a few minutes when it was going to come down, you see what I'm saying? This is fishy, and these three criteria, confidence, confirmation, and detail, have been met.
You hear that? Keep your eye on that building. It'll be coming down.
Now, once we've established that, we say, well, what are the kinds of foreknowledge that exist? And I make a distinction between two broad kinds of foreknowledge. One is evidence-based foreknowledge, and one is action-based foreknowledge. Evidence-based foreknowledge just means, you know, you look around and you gather evidence that something is going to happen, and then you make a prediction. So we could call that, if it's confirmed and is given with a lot of detail and confidence, we could call it foreknowledge. And it would be evidence-based, and there's nothing fishy about it. It happens. The second kind of foreknowledge is action-based. And all I mean by that is that the person knows something is going to happen because they're going to act to make it happen. Or alternatively, they're aware of somebody else who's going to act to make it happen. So if I say, I know I'm going to be sitting at my desk at 8:15 tomorrow morning, I know that because I'm going to make a point of acting in such a way that I'm at my desk at 8:15. And that's a different kind of foreknowledge. And there's nothing fishy about that either. It's very common. It's great. It's not no problem. But it can be a problem if somebody misrepresents the kind of foreknowledge that's at issue. So if I say that I'm acting on evidence-based foreknowledge when that's impossible, then we have a problem. NIST, when it came out with its final study on World Trade 7, it said, no, it didn't come down because of storage of fuel tanks in the building. It didn't come down because of damage from World Trade 1. It came down from office fire and fires that were presumably caused by the collapse of the other buildings. And they led to a whole string of really unique, peculiar events. This long span girder and this column, and one thing heats up and it pushes another thing off its seat, and that leads to this and that. And this whole strange sequence of events, which was invisible to the eye of anyone looking at the building, it all took place within the structure of the building, took place really at the very last moment, within a few minutes or even a few seconds of the actual initiation of the collapse. So that's the official government explanation of why World Trade 7 came down. There were fires. They led to peculiar, unique events that happened at the last moment. But if that's true, what point is there in talking about what some engineer thought around noon on the day, you know, 5.5 hours before the building came down, or what firefighters might have thought? And to just sum this up, what I'm saying about Building 7 is that the official government investigators are trying to get us to believe that an evidence-based prediction had been made, that there was evidence and there was a rational conclusion that Building 7 might come down, whereas in fact, when we study it carefully, we see that that does not fly. It's impossible. That in fact, we are led to the conclusion that it must have been action-based foreknowledge. Or to put it bluntly, people knew it was going to come down because they had been told that by people who were determined to bring it down. So in other words, this foreknowledge, this particular kind of foreknowledge, supports the hypothesis that World Trade 7 was brought down by controlled demolition.
This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.
Power to the people.